Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 5 o'clock.
Here comes the pressure. Throw! Intercepted! It's picked by Diamador Lenore.
We're getting you ready for the Pac-12 Championship.
I think Oregon is at the point where, athletically, you're better than 85% of the teams that you're going to play.
This is Primetime on Pac-12 Championship Week.
Brought to you by Allen Webb Mitsubishi. Visit Allen Webb Mitsubishi in the Vancouver Auto Mall or online at allenwebbmitsubishi.com.
Primetime with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, it's 5:05 here on The Fan. We've got Joey Harrington coming in studio today a day early because the Oregon game will be on our air tomorrow. So he'll be popping in at 5:30. We'll talk about Oregon, Utah. We'll talk about Chris Peterson stepping down and so much more. Football talk with Joey Harrington coming up here in about, 25 minutes. In the club tonight, we've got hilarity and hijinks, of which the club has never seen before.
Really?
No.
It's a bold statement.
Total lie. We do have this story of the guy who was, how do I put this? He was feeling up. Well, he thought the camera was off, but it wasn't.
Ah, yeah. You always got to assume that the camera's on. Got to be careful with that.
I think so.
And I need to talk about Joe Biden. I don't know if you saw Joe Biden today.
I did. Yeah, I saw that clip.
But I saw two pieces. One, we need to talk about Joe Biden's bus and slogan. And two, we got to talk about the push-ups.
Okay. And we didn't get to this yesterday. The top Christmas gift for kids this year is something called the Buttheads Fart Launcher 3000.
Now, finally, a toy that we can all get behind.
I mean, I always say this, but Idiocracy. God.
What do you mean?
It predicted everything so well.
It's right around the corner.
Great.
I finally saw that.
Thank you for finally watching
Idiocracy.
It's a terrible movie. It was awful.
But We're heading towards it right now.
I understand we're heading towards it, but boy, that was one of those that maybe had just been built up so much, but that thing was up.
I don't think it's a terrible movie.
That thing is a hunk of crap.
You're a hunk of crap.
Yeah, you really are.
Wow.
Big jerk.
Lynch feels very strongly about
I like that movie.
Spell Mike's name.
M-I-Y? Shijanyu.
All right, let's get to the Hot 5 and 5, guys. Five guys.
Hot topics. Hot opinions.
Burgers and fries.
Burgers and fries.
I kind of want.
Hot today.
And they hot air.
They want a five guy?
It's time for the
I've never
hot
been.
Five at five.
Really?
That's hot.
Anyone want to come bring some down to the station?
I wonder if I can Uber Eats. I can go for a five
the
guys burger
five
right now.
At five. Refreshed on the Fan by Frost Brewed Coors Light.
I've long said of the fast chain, you know, whatever.
Fast food chain?
Yeah, but it's slightly better than fast food, I would say. But
Five Guys
it's the tier above it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the tier above it. But of the fast food higher, you know, whatever, Five Guys is my favorite.
Calm down.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's not true. Shake Shack, but there's no Shake Shack around
here.
Yeah,
Five Guys is quite good.
No. Right. Shake Shack 1, Five Guys 2.
Number five.
Damn it, now I want Shake Shack.
Mariners have traded catcher Omar Narvaez to the Brewers.
Yeah, my brother's all pissed about this.
Yeah, Narvaez was actually pretty good last year.
He was one of their more consistent hitters, and I think they traded him for like the 26th best prospect in the organization.
Seattle gets right-handed pitcher Adam Hill. They also get a 2020 competitive balance round B selection, whatever the hell that means.
I don't know.
Hill is a former fourth-round pick of the Mets who's been most recently an A-ball with a 3.92 ERA as a starter. He is only 22 years old. One other trade, the Astros have dealt outfielder Jake Mariznick to the Mets for two prospects.
And almost 4 ERA at single A-ball? That's not good.
Mariznick hit 233 for the Stros last year, but he has a wicked glove, so You have any hot...
No, I don't. I know very little about him.
Well, he's going to hit worse because he's not going to have banging on a trash can to help him anymore.
Yeah, but he can... I tell you what, he can roam center field, bro.
Well, there you go.
But I thought the Mets already had a center fielder that can roam center field and can't hit.
Well, I think that's kind of the genesis of the Mets in general.
Number four.
Cowboys-Bears tonight in Chicago on Thursday Night Football. This game, the definition of mediocrity, as both teams are 6-6. However, there is a big difference between being 7-6 and 6-7, so that's why this is actually an important game. Cowboys lead the NFC East by one game. The Bears are trying to stay in the wild card race against the Rams.
I actually think when you look at Trubisky's actually been playing a little bit better.
Yeah, his passer rating last four games is 91.
Yeah, and he had a couple big throws last week on third down that were legit. That were legit NFL throws. Meanwhile, Dallas is searching for a win against anyone of any sort of note.
Yeah, well, they haven't beaten a good team all year.
No. I kind of like Chicago in and this, by the way.
If they beat Chicago, will they have beaten a good team all year?
No, they will have beaten a mediocre team. And it'll be interesting because normally, you know, I was thinking about betting this because you're telling me I get a home dog on Thursday night. But remember, Dallas played on Thursday. For Dallas, this is a full week's rest.
Right.
Number three.
Washington State has extended the contract of head coach Mike Leach through 2024.
So he used that whole SEC thing to scare up some more change.
Well, it sounds fancy and big. It's really just them agreeing to a provision in his deal that will extend it by 1 year. He's going to make $4 million in 2020. But the Cougs, you know, this will be their fifth straight bowl game. Elsewhere, inside USC with Scott Wolf, who covers the Trojans program, reports that USC was in talks with Bob Stoops to be their next coach, but they couldn't agree on the assistant coach salary pool.
Yeah, and this kind of goes back to the whole Mike Leach thing I was talking about yesterday. It's one thing to be able to pay your coach $4 million. You got to be able to keep assistants. Remember, Washington State hasn't been able to do that. And I find it fascinating that if you want Bob Stoops, it blows my mind. If you think Bob Stoops is the guy, you're telling me you can't come up with an extra $3 to $4 million a year in that budget to go get him the assistant coaches that he wants?
That's why I kind of don't believe that story.
Yeah, I just don't believe it. It's bizarre to me. Of all the expenses that you're going to pay in a program, I'd shave off a little bit of you know, the fat and go get a real staff.
FootballScoop.com reports Oregon State offensive coordinator Brian Lindgren is a candidate for the same position at Arizona State. Also mentioned is Boise State OC Zach Hill. Now, Lindgren made $500,000 with the Beavers. The guy Arizona State just fired made $700,000.
And again, this is when we know Herm's going poaching. Like, he got rid of his offensive staff and he wants to bring in new people. And, you know, this is the problem when you are, when you're a smaller program that doesn't have deep pockets. When you start to have success, your coaches will get poached.
Beavers AD Scott Barnes says he likes their chances to keep their entire staff together. And of course, he's trying to increase the staff salary pool. This from the Las Vegas Review Journal, and it's an Oregon coaching rumor that Ducks OC Marcus Arroyo is a candidate for the head coaching vacancy at UNLV.
Yeah, and I saw that, of course, then Twitter is begging him to take the job. Oregon fan is back on the hating Marcus Arroyo bandwagon.
Well, I tell you what, man, I got a hot take on that.
Yeah.
And it is simply that if he goes to UNLV, fine.
Yeah.
Number one. Fine.
Sure. And by the way,
is that hot?
Number one.
Why would you take that job?
He won't.
I mean, that's
a dead end job.
It is an absolute dead end job.
And number
some people
one,
think with the new Raiders stadium being built, I don't know, maybe that's going to make a difference, but
I don't know, man.
I don't want that job.
I'll tell you what, the one thing about that job, if you want, well, one, you don't have to play in a Power 5 league.
Yep.
And two, you are not following a legend. The exact opposite. You're following a high school coach, so your expectations aren't, I mean, they aren't, you know.
Yeah, but when's the last time UNLV was relevant?
Oh, geez, in football?
I mean, it's...
I don't even remember when they were.
I remember when I was in the Mountain West, they had Jason Thomas...
Who's the greatest coach in UNLV football history? Did John Robinson coach there?
Yeah, John Robinson was there, I think, in between USC stints. In fact, I think John Robinson was there when I was there for a year. Not when I was at UNLV, but when they were in my conference. I think John Robinson was their coach when they had a couple halfway decent seasons.
All right. Number one is that Carmelo Anthony's contract with the Trailblazers has been amended, and it is going to be fully guaranteed for the rest of the season. So they are leaving no doubt about that. That's according to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski.
Something.
So, Melo is 35 years old, but he is averaging, or no, this is just last week for Western Conference Player of the Week, but he averaged 22 points, 7.7 rebounds, and 2.7 assists. He was shooting 57%. That's damn good.
He has been really good, and we'll see if it's sustainable, but, you know, we had Quick on, and he talked about how, you know, maybe this is the thing that finally woke up Carmelo Anthony when he realized that no one wanted him and basketball was going to get taken away from him. So hopefully this is a kind of a permanent sort of, attitude readjustment, and that it doesn't kind of slowly slip into old behavior.
Do we know how much he's going to make? Have they said that?
I don't. I'll look it up for you.
I don't know if it's out there, but I'd be curious to know how much they're going to pay him.
By the way, I looked up UNLV football. Would you care to guess? So I went back 30 years. You kind of care to guess how many bowl games?
30 seasons?
30 seasons.
One.
Three.
Did they win?
2-1.
It's a start.
2-1. I mean, it's...
When was the last time they were in a bowl?
2013. And then, and then you have to go back to 2000. And then 1994, that program is dreadful.
Tell you what, late 90s though, baby. Yeah. That 6-year stretch where they went to two bowl games.
Yeah, it was really, really humming.
Well, any hoosies, we had a good conversation with Jason Quick on Carmelo Anthony and the state of the Blazers earlier in our show. If you missed that, you can go to 1080thefan.com. Les Schwab podcast. The Hot 5 at 5 is refreshed by Coors Light. Enter to win tickets to a Blazers home game and a $250 gift card to the team store wherever you buy Coors Light.
Now,
Coors Light!
According to...
Wait, I'm not done.
Oh, I thought you were done with your read.
Coors Light! Made to chill. Okay.
One more time?
No.
Oh, okay. According to this, which is SportTrack, which I used to... It gives you salary cap details.
Yeah.
$2 million.
I like that website. Mm-hmm. They're paying Melo what? $2 million.
Okay. 2.1 mil.
That's good. Well, I'll tell you what. It's better than Hazonia and Tolliver.
Yes.
Right? The bar was not exactly high.
No.
All right. Coming up next, let's talk about championship weekend. Then we'll get Joey Harrington in here. It's 5:16 on the Fan.
This is Pac-12 Championship Week on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Alan Webb, Mitsubishi.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, we just flipped the Bears-Cowboys game on, and Joe and Troy are up there.
It's casual Troy Aikman. Casual Thursday.
Yeah, and he's got... So Troy Aikman's not in a suit. Normally those guys are in a suit, but neither of them are.
Well, it's pretty cold,
it's
I'm
cold
assuming,
there.
There in Chicago.
Yeah, and they've got sweaters. It looks like Joe might be wearing an ascot, but he's not. It's a sweater. Anyway...
You know, the turtleneck's making a comeback.
Yeah, well, Gronk. Thanks, yeah. Gronk.
He's some sort of villain in there.
But... I would like to, just real quick, before we get into championship weekend, and then Joey Harrington will be in here in 10 minutes. We'll talk Oregon, Utah. Aikman is going hoodie under really nice, dressy coat.
Yes. Nice sweater.
Yeah.
Dressy, long hoodie. Coat, hoodie.
And I see this look some, and I'm quite jealous of somebody who can pull off a hoodie under the sport coat. Like, there's some people that can do that.
Yeah.
I can't. You know, and I want to be able to.
You know, look, it's the blending of the casual and the...
I love it.
You know what I like? And I can't do it. I've tried. Suit with tennis shoes.
Oh.
Yeah, I look...
People do that?
Yeah. It's a whole thing now where people will wear... And it's not, you know, some people will go full on like shirt and tie, but they'll wear a suit with like a casual shirt, and then they'll wear like a pair of Jordans or a nice pair of you know, whatever sneakers. I tried doing it, and I felt like a turd. It was right on the path to Turdville, and I was like, yeah, I can't do this.
Yeah, I feel like you, yeah. I probably would have. Like, let's say I'm sitting at the end of your bed while you're getting ready, and you ask me.
All right.
And I'm watching you.
Yeah.
Longingly.
Doing a little shuffle for you. Yeah. Maybe a St. Elmo's Fire shoulder shimmy.
Yeah. And you ask me, hey, should I do this? I'd be like, no, don't. Yeah. It's not going to work.
No, tried it, and Immediately, I took one look in the mirror and was like, nope, back to the dress shoes.
Well, maybe we can ask. The next time we don't have Troy on, we can not ask him.
Yeah, what's with the hoodie, Troy? Do you think?
I think he looks great. I'm just saying.
Well, he does, but you know why? Like, he didn't pick that out.
Oh, you don't think?
No, there's a stylist.
Oh.
Yeah, none of these people here pick their own clothes. There's a stylist that works with everyone, and then at the end it'll be like wardrobe provided by.
You know who looks bad these days? Like, and I hate to say this, but it's Al Michaels. Al never has a coat on.
No, he's going Jim Jordan style.
Yeah, yes, he does, because I think he rolls up his sleeves too, and his dress shirts are ill fitting.
Mm. Which is interesting, because you figure you're Al Michaels, you got a gajillion dollars. That hard to get a fitted shirt? I'm telling you, a fitted dress shirt, oh, it's a game changer for you.
Well, yeah. But it's tight, you know.
Oh, the shirt is tight. I thought you meant it was kind of loose.
No, his are. I'm saying
everything has to be tight.
Yeah, the fitted shirt, it makes you feel like if you got a little spare tire down there like I do, or like you're just, you know, I'm not skinny.
Yeah, but I'm here to tell you that
it's tight.
If given the option, even if you've
It looks good.
Even if you're a little, you know, whatever. Like, no one's the Rock. I think you're
I thought you were going to say the Rop.
You are better off having something, I think, slightly too tight than something that's too big.
Well, that's the new style.
You
it
look
used to
really like a slob.
It used to be baggy was in.
Yeah.
Baggy no longer in.
No.
Bro. All right, are we done talking about that?
I think we're done.
So the game's tomorrow. Not tomorrow, but Saturday. Oklahoma Baylor is the first one up, 9 a.m.
And I think that's got a chance to probably be the best game if you're talking about, you know, exciting and being competitive. I mean, the first one, right, Baylor got up on them, was it 24-3? And then Oklahoma made the frantic comeback, ended up being a three-point game. So this one, if you want to talk about raw entertainment value, I would think this is the highlight game of the weekend.
Baylor's interesting because they're really good.
Mm-hmm.
And
but they're not spectacular, and they easily, I mean,
they play, but what Matt Rhule built at Temple, remember watching Temple when he was there?
Yeah.
That's the same thing he's built at Baylor. It's like they don't have, I mean, they're just a couple years removed from being 1-11,
weren't they? 1-11, 2 years removed from it.
And man, you watch them play, and you're right, they're not as talented as Oklahoma, but man, are they well coached?
They fly
the ball.
They don't make a lot of mistakes, and they're not the most, they're not the most explosive team. But it's not a bad. They're just a well-rounded team. But they are in a lot of close games, and I'm not going to say they're fortunate, right? They found a way to grind those out, but they had a nail biter against Texas Tech, nail biter against West Virginia. Still can't believe that they managed to beat TCU. Finally, the Oklahoma one came back and bit him in the ass. Then, of course, that nail biter against Kansas.
Well, think about this.
I mean, that was...
Shut up. Although I called that. Remember that?
You did. Because
the spread was 14. I'm like, what? Baylor's going to roll them. They beat him 61-6.
Yeah. Oops.
Baylor was 6-6 last year. They did get to a bowl game and they won it. And the year before that, they were 1-11, dude. And think about this.
A remarkable job.
Remarkable. Matt Rhule is really freaking good.
Yeah.
And he may go to the NFL. I know the NFL is salivating over him, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that. But think about how close they are to being undefeated. Like you said, they were up 24 points or whatever it is on Oklahoma.
Yep.
And then what would we be saying? Would like, if Georgia beat LSU and Baylor went undefeated.
You can't be.
Who Baylor. Are your four?
You can't be undefeated in a Power Five and not get in.
So who's left out then?
It would never happen.
So who would be left out?
Boy, that's interesting. Honestly, it would be LSU. LSU would get left out.
With all those top five wins.
With all those top five wins, because Georgia would be a one-loss team.
I mean top 10 wins.
Georgia would be a one-loss team, and Georgia beat you, and they won the SEC. Yeah, LSU would get left out. Be Clemson, Ohio State, Georgia, and Baylor.
Wow.
You'll never have you can't have a one-loss team in conference that wins it get bumped for a different team in their conference that didn't. And you're not going to get an undefeated Power Five champion that there's just some things that are universal truths, and that's one of them.
Then we've got Georgia LSU, 2-4.
See, and I don't think this is going to be that competitive. I really don't. I think
1 o'clock.
I think you may hang around for a little bit, but remember, Georgia's offense is sketchy at best. And not that LSU plays great defense, far from it. But remember that Georgia is without their two best receivers and their running back is beat up and we don't know if he's going to play. So when you already have a bit of an anemic offense, they're not going to be able to put up a ton of points on LSU. And eventually, you know, if this offense is struggling, the dam will burst. This can be close, but I think LSU pulls away here. I don't think Georgia has what it takes.
And then the late ones on Saturday, Virginia, Clemson, which I don't think anybody, are you going to watch that? I'm not going to watch
that.
Unless you find out it's close.
The spread, I think is in some places it's been bet up to 30 points. I think it opened at 20, 28 or 28 and a half. And in some places it's up over 30 now.
Yeah, well, I'd still take Clemson.
I'm not betting on Virginia.
And then Ohio State, Wisconsin. The Virginia Clemson game's at 4:30, and then the Ohio State, Wisconsin game's at 5.
I will go in order of games that I think will be good and possibly entertaining. Baylor, Oklahoma is the one that I think will be good and entertaining. I think Utah, Oregon will be a close game, but I don't know if it's going to be entertaining. I think both teams are going to run the ball a lot. The weather is going to be horrific. There won't be a lot of people there. And this one's got a chance to be 17, 14, 21, 17. And I don't know if aesthetically, if it's going to be a pleasing game. And outside of that, I just don't think that there's going to be a lot of other great football games.
Well, you got Cincinnati, Memphis, Hawaii, Boise State, you know, some other games like that. But yeah. Let's dig into the Utah, Oregon game. It'll be here on The Fan tomorrow. And Joey Harrington will be in studio to talk about it next. Here's Mike.
This is Pac-12 Championship Week on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Allen Webb Mitsubishi.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, tomorrow on The Fan, Utah-Oregon Pac-12 Championship game. And while some of you may be tuning in to hear Joey Harrington in studio tomorrow at 5:30, it's interesting to note.
You will be mistaken.
You will be. You will hear Oregon playing Utah. So Joey is in a day early. It is the great Joseph H. Harrington.
With a strong sweater game yet again.
This is a sweatshirt sweater.
Oh. Yeah. Well, it looks very soft.
Okay, can I reveal? Okay, first of all.
First of all, you got my initials wrong.
Joseph J. Harrington.
J. Joseph Harrington,
my bad.
Yeah, I'm a John Joseph.
The third, Esquire.
No, not at all.
Can we reveal?
I still don't know what Esquire means exactly.
It's a magazine.
It's not a bad magazine. I got it free on a credit card offer, but you know, I don't know. Like when you hear like Ted Theodore Logan Esquire, I think
he's the editor.
I think it's like sir, or like, I don't think it's like an official title. I think anyone can be Esquire, but
I want to be Esquire,
but I'm not certain.
Do you want to be?
Yeah.
Well, and he's got a good name for it.
That's a sweet name.
Cause he could go I Everett Ropp.
Yeah.
Esquire. And that is a good Esquire name.
I Ropp Esquire.
We'll just call you Ropp Esquire.
I love that. Can we reveal something?
Yeah, what do you got?
I would like to see, I'm just going to ask, if we can, because Joey's a very well-dressed man.
Yeah.
Can we reveal your secret to dress shirts and sweaters?
You mean the fact that I get them at Old Navy?
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. Joey Harrington is dressed to the nines every time he comes in here.
He is a sharp, you are a sharp-dressed man.
And you revealed to us once off the air that you do shop at Old Navy and you get all your shirts at once and then you just take them to a tailor. And you save.
You get Taylor Old Navy shirts.
Because it's like I'm in between. Like I'm not a large or I'm not a medium. You know, you just kind of like that in between. Sure. So it's like, well, okay. I'll go, you know, find the Old Navy shirts that are on sale for like 6 1/4.
Yeah.
Right. And then, and they're great because you can just wear them around every day.
You're talking $6.25.
Well, sometimes you'll pay like 17. Like when they're full price, they're like 17
bucks.
He
waits for the BOGO offers though.
But then like you find the sales and they're like, you know, $9.50 for a shirt that, like you don't feel bad knocking around in a shirt. Yeah. So then, you know, but if it's a little big, then it's like, well, you know what? I'll just take it down the street and, you know, there's a little alteration place down the street and, you know, take it in for $10. And now you got like a dress shirt or, you know, what looks to be a
custom
dress shirt, but it's like a knock around, like, you know, you don't feel bad, like, wrecking it up for $19.
I love that. That's balling on a budget shopping tips from Joey Harrington. It's great. And then the
sweaters. This is actually, again, this was like a,
that's a
sweater.
I got
this like 4 years ago, but where it's some of like the, like a outlet rack store, but it's a Pendleton. And I was like, heck yeah. Like support local. Same thing though. Like
Pendleton is great.
Yeah. But then, but it was like, you know, $12, and then you take it down to the tailor and just like, you know, now you have a $22 sweater.
See, he's on to something because he is way greater than I and is way more wealthy than me. But like, I like Pendleton and I really like Filson stuff,
yeah.
But you spend a lot of money to look like a sassy janitor. Like it's, yeah, you know, it's like $100 and $115 for like
it's a look.
It's a great shirt, but at the same time, it's a bit much.
Yeah, the irony of that, all that outdoor stuff, it's like, oh, I look rustic and go outdoors. But the moment you go outdoors, you ruin what you're actually wearing.
Yes.
So I just dropped $145 and now it's stained with like mud and moss and sap. And it's like, you know, what's the point?
Filson is my favorite clothing company ever, based out of Seattle. They just make the best.
Seattle sucks.
They make the best stuff. But I laugh whenever I get their catalog because it's like these Alaskan fishermen and it's just these woodsmen sort of the people. And they do, you cannot buy anything from Filson that's less than $100.
No.
It just doesn't.
But it lasts forever.
I guess, but at the same time, like, who's out in the middle like of an elk hunt in your Alaskan guide shirt that you spent $145 on? I'm not fixing my motorcycle in a $145 Filson thing.
Yeah.
It's like the most farcical ad of all time.
Hence why, if I do find that stuff, I found it at the outlet or I go to Old Navy.
Yeah.
What do you do for shoes? Real quick.
I wear them.
I know, but where do you get them?
All over the place. We're mostly Nike.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I stocked up on a lot of like Cole Haan stuff before they sold off from Nike when I was still playing. Just, you know, thinking ahead.
All right, well, there's shopping tips from Joey.
Yeah. There you go.
Fashion Weekly.
Yeah. It is Thursday. Joey Harrington in studio a day early, courtesy BMW Portland. We'll do two segments, so we'll have time to dive into a lot of stuff here. But Worry Meter, the patented 1080 The Fan Joey Harrington worry meter for Oregon, Utah. We're gonna go scale.
Okay. Don't be doing some like nonsensical scale and screw it up again.
Yeah,
this
is really straightforward.
Okay.
Minus 44 to 4 by fours.
Oh.
Worry meter.
My worry meter, I'm gonna put it at -4.
That's pretty high.
And here's why. It's different than my worry is different than it has been in weeks past. It's a different kind of worry. It's not a, oh man, we're looking really, really good. I hope something screwy doesn't happen. This is 2 weeks in a row. 2 weeks ago where we look like, you know, the stuff you find on the bottom of your shoe for two and a half quarters.
Yeah.
And then last week where we just looked really flat.
Yeah.
I'm worried because these last 2 weeks have not been trending in the right direction to be playing. I don't think even arguably this is going to be the best team that they play all year.
Agreed.
Period.
And I put that with Auburn as well. This is the best team they've played.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. This Utah team is for real.
And the other side of it is not only have you not played well the last 2 weeks, the last 8 weeks, Utah is crushing people.
Yeah, and it's they have been doing the step up every single week that the trend that Oregon had been on
since
the Colorado game all the way until Arizona State and then all of this Arizona State, then, you know, well, it's a family show, so we'll keep it like that. But that is what they have been doing every single week, and they're doing it the way that Oregon wants to do it: defense and running the football. Yeah. We've talked about it the last couple weeks. This is the best defense they'll see, and this is the best running back that they will see all year.
And Huntley is kind of doing the same thing, where maybe the numbers aren't. There really are a good comp with Oregon, because like with Herbert, you may say, well, the numbers aren't exactly like eye popping, like with what Tua would be. They're better than Huntley's numbers, but they're asking him to be efficient, and they're asking him to play a role as opposed to maybe take over the team. So they really are kind of mirror images of each other a little bit.
I would agree with that in principle. He is a much different type of player than Justin is, though, right? He's going to be quicker. He's not as natural a passer.
Yeah.
I would feel much more comfortable as a coach putting the ball in Justin's hands and saying, go throw the ball and win a game.
Yeah, neither side wants to throw it 40 times.
Yeah, but I think if you had to throw it 40 times, then Justin would be the guy to do it, not Huntley.
Yes.
Does nobody being in the stands affect the players?
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about that. Did you ever have a game like that? Where you're like, it seems like a big game, but then you run out on the field and
It's wet.
I don't get it. Look, I don't understand the Pac-12 championship game. I don't understand the look. I understand the financial aspect. I understand setting up a quote unquote championship. I understand the direction that college football has gone, but I think it's stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
And they put
this
in a place that people don't want to be.
It's nonsensical. The game itself. You're simply creating another opportunity for players to get injured. Simply to make money. And then you put it at a place, at a time, you know, at a place that nobody's going to go, you know, nobody in the Bay cares about what happens between Utah and Oregon. And you're putting it at Friday evening at 5 o'clock when your target market is just going to be getting on the road, coming home from work. I mean, it is absolutely nonsensical, everything about this game. But, you know, what do you do?
Do you think that it's better when they move it to Vegas? It's going to be in the new Vegas stadium.
No.
You think it's the same?
It's the same thing because it, look, what there's no value to this game if you're a fan, right? It's playoff. That's going to, you know, you essentially have, you know, kind of say kind of four choices. If you do make the playoff that year that we did with Marcus, the discussion was, well, do you go to the first semifinal?
Yeah.
Because most people don't have the disposable income to go to four separate games. Pac-12 championship game, said bowl game, hopefully the Rose Bowl, semifinal and championship, right? Yeah. So now if you get to the playoff, you have to decide between semifinal and championship. The fact that you have a playoff devalues the Rose Bowl completely. I mean, I've never seen a fan base or a, you know, I won't say a fan base. I mean, I've never seen a season in which the Rose Bowl was so poorly thought of, or let's just say not even thought of at all. I mean, it's an afterthought for crying out loud. This is the Rose Bowl that we're talking about. And then to throw on a Pac-12 championship game, it's like, that's the fourth game on the list of potential, you know, end of season playoff type stuff. I wouldn't want to go.
No, it's
to
the
that.
Easiest one to take out because you say, if we go to the Pac-12 title game and we lose, then why the hell did I spend money to go there?
Yes.
And if I go there and we win, there's other games that I want to go to, and now I can't because I just blew my wad going down to San Francisco and playing in a crappy environment with bad weather. So I'm with you. I don't understand why anyone would go. And to your point about the Rose Bowl, it's interesting. When Chris Peterson just got done retiring, obviously, which happened a couple days ago, I saw in his press conference that he said that. He said, I spent my entire life dreaming about going to the Rose Bowl. And he said, I got there last year and it didn't mean anything to me. And I get that some of that is burnout and whatever, but I think there is a real element to that. That there's a guy that spent a lifetime in coaching and playing, trying to get to the Rose Bowl, and he got there, and the game didn't mean a damn thing.
I completely agree. I've told you the story that I remember being out on the outer concourse with my dad when I was 11. It was Shin Beckler and it was Michigan and USC in the 89 Rose Bowl. And I did the quick little math of the plaques of all the MVPs of the Rose Bowl, and 1, 2, 3 all the way down. And the one at the bottom right hand corner was my senior year. I said, Dad, that one's going to be me. And I remember that like it was yesterday. That's all you grew up wanting to do was play in the Rose Bowl.
There's nothing wrong with the Fiesta Bowl, but it wasn't the Rose.
No. Trivia question. Who's the only school in the history of the conference to win back-to-back conference championships and go to the Rose Bowl neither time?
Yeah. You guys.
Oregon.
Yeah.
No.
Mm. So when you're a player, it's wet. There's nobody in the stands. That does. Do you have to guard against affecting the team in this game? Because it's a big game.
Sure, you do. But both teams have it.
Both teams have it.
I mean, it's not like it's not an advantage or a disadvantage for one of the teams because both of them are in the same situation. It is simply a different atmosphere than if you were playing anywhere, either at home or on the road, because even if you're on the road, you have the energy from the opposing crowd and the feeling of, hey, it's just us, locked together on our sideline, no one's getting through us, kind of thing. Or if you're at home, you've got the support of the home crowd. But at a place like this, it's just meh.
Let's talk about the Chris Peterson retirement with Joey Harrington in studio, but we'll do it next on The Fan.
This is Pac-12 Championship Week on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Allen Webb Mitsubishi.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, back in studio with Joey Harrington a day early because Utah, Oregon will be here on The Fan tomorrow.
And I just couldn't wait to see you guys.
Yeah.
It was Jones.
Mostly it was, I just called. I said, hey, can you guys schedule a Pac-12 championship game so I can see Isaac and Suka daily?
Done. It happens.
Yeah. He's got that kind of clout.
It happens.
He makes phone calls. Stuff happens.
And we're here. Look at this. So, Peterson.
Love him. Love that man.
Chris Peterson, why?
He was my wide receiver coach when I was at Oregon.
Oh, I forgot about that connection.
Pete is
classy guy, huh?
Pete is one of the most solid human beings that you will ever come across.
It seems it. This all seems genuine, right? Like, sometimes these coaches are full of crap. A lot of times they're full of crap.
Yeah.
Or these things happen, and you're like, ah, there's something else going on, or this or that. No. This all seems real genuine because he's real genuine.
He is as solid a human being as you will find. And, you know, it's interesting. Pete has perspective, I think, more than any college coach out there, because the reason he left Oregon, it was right before my senior year, and his son, his two-year-old at the time, was running through the stands at Autzen and tripped and fell and hit his head. And so, you know, they take him into the hospital and do a quick scan, and they found a brain tumor. And so Pete left coaching, and, you know, as any of us would do to be with his son and to get through this with his family. And once Sam was healthy and on the road to recovery, that's when he got back into coaching. And Dirk Cutter, who was our former coordinator, was at Boise. And so he brought Pete over to Boise, and you know, the rest is history. But what it gave him was and not that he didn't have it beforehand, because he's just that kind of person, but it gave him a perspective that football is not the end-all be-all of human existence. And a lot of coaches live that way because it's all they have in their life. Mm-hmm. It's what defines them. It's what it's their legacy. It's without football, you know, who are they? That's not Pete. He is first and foremost a good person, and secondarily, he is a fantastic football coach.
And I know this caught a lot of people by surprise, but in fact, I was having lunch today with someone who a booster, let's say that, of the UW program. And he was telling a story because people were asking him about that. And he said when he first got the job, so it was his first year there, and he was talking with who's the AD now, Jen Cohen, mm-hmm. and at the time was an associate or whatever. Right. And they were at some sort of, you know, fundraising mixer sort of thing. And people were saying, oh, man, the heights he's going to take us to. And, you know, he'll be here for 15 years. And he says, I never told anyone about this, but she goes, between me and you, she's like, this guy won't be here that long. And they were like, what? And she said, that guy's got other things that he's going to do. Mm-hmm. And that was 5 years ago. And he said, he thought about that the moment that he resigned. He just kind of smiled and was like, she knew it. That the people that were close to him maybe didn't see it coming right now, but I don't think there were a lot of people up there that believed that he was going to be there for 15 years. I think they knew what kind of man he was, and that eventually there was going to be an expiration light on how much he wanted to grind on this.
Yeah, I don't think people realize the life commitment it takes to be a college football coach.
Yeah.
I mean, I kid you not. You know, the example I always give is Jeff Tedford. You know, Tedford was as good a coach as I've been around, as I was around in, you know, 20 years of playing football. But he slept at his office from Sunday to Thursday. He had, when he was the O coordinator at Oregon with us, he had a blow up air mattress. And then, you know, when he went to Cal, he had, you know, had him build a Murphy bed into the wall of his office. You know, you're the head coach, you can have him do that. But he literally slept at his office from Sunday to Thursday. And he'd go home on Thursday night, and he would see his kids that night. And then Friday, we would go to the team hotel. So he was gone. After the game on Saturday, he'd come back, and then he'd be at the office by 6 a.m. on Sunday, breaking down the game film, only to sleep there till the coming Thursday.
Now through recruiting on top of it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't now try to have a family. Yeah. Now try to have a normal life. And if you lose a game, you're not working hard enough. I mean, there's so much that the general public does not see that goes into, you know, if you knew how the sausage was made, right?
Yeah.
So I don't, not that I don't blame him for losing, but for leaving, but I'm not surprised at all, because it is a grind. And for someone who has more at his core than just football, That makes sense.
Exactly, because the Sabins of the world can't walk away because there's nothing else.
Yeah.
It's all consuming.
Well, Paterno was like that.
Yeah, Paterno's like that. And there's
the second people, he walks away, he's dead.
Well, they call it the Patton thing, right? It's like General Patton was like, the day I leave the military is the day I'm going to die. And Bobby Bowden was quoted as saying that. Bob Knight was one of those guys who was like, dude, the day I leave, I know I'm going to die and like no purpose.
Yeah.
And if you're not like that, especially now with the time commitment, with recruiting and the money you make, you don't have to coach until you're 65 anymore. So, you know, I think there will be more people like him that have some perspective now with the money that are going to be able to walk
away.
Bob
Stoops did it.
Yeah.
Yes, but define like him, because I don't think people, as many people like him in terms of being a, not that other coaches aren't good-hearted people,
yeah,
right? But Pete was different. Pete is different than the majority of coaches out there. And I don't think that those type of people make it to the top of the mountain as often because they're not as cutthroat, because
they're
not as focused.
Yeah.
Balanced. Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can't be balanced and make it to the top.
Yeah.
It has to be your sole focus in life.
An obsession.
Yes.
Good point.
Do we know how Chris Peterson's son is doing, Sam?
He's healthy.
Is he?
He is healthy.
Awesome. And how old is he now?
Oh gosh.
Well, that's got to be 20 plus years.
Well,
right?
Yeah. So Sam, I always had a feeling that once Sam left the house and went to college, that Pete might consider leaving Boise.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so Sam, I think would probably be 24, 25 maybe now. But is doing well and is healthy and,
good.
Yeah.
I can tell your general affection for him. You can tell by the look on your face that Coach Pete means something to you.
I loved when I was calling games and we'd have a Washington game, because I'd just get to sit in his office and just talk and just catch up. And you could, he's just one of those people that you enjoy spending time with, because he's real and he's not trying to feed you something and he's not trying to put up some front of, you know, well, this is how great it's going to be and watch this and here's all the things I'm going to do. No, he just sits and talks, asks how, you know, remembers mom and dad and asks how the, you know, brothers are doing. And he's just a good person.
And I don't want to be the cynical one, because I know it comes across this way sometimes, but most of my experience with football coaches is the exact opposite of that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say that they're bad people. They're just not. Football coaches and me have never never seen eye to eye, maybe. I've never appreciated that sort of mentality. And so when you do come across someone like that, you hold on to it. I had one coach at BYU that was like that to this day that I absolutely love him. You know who Wilcox to me,
Justin,
is like this. Yep. Whenever I've had the pleasure of sitting with Justin, you know, 15, 20 times over the years. And I can count on one hand the number of times we've talked about football.
Yeah.
And he is, you know, we talk about fly fishing and you talk about, you know, his family. And he's one of those guys for me that that is like that. And they are. You're right. So they are few and far between. So maybe that statement was off when I think more people will walk away, because
more people may choose to leave because they're financially well off. But I don't know that those that many people like Pete will actually make it to the top.
Yeah.
Another guy that was like that, I think I'm going to bring him up because I think you've mentioned him before from your NFL days, and he's in the news lately because he's probably not going to be back as the Cowboys coach. Didn't you say this Jason Garrett was like this?
Jason Garrett.
Liked him.
He and Mike Mularkey were my two favorite coaches. I had them both in Miami. Jason Garrett was my quarterback coach in Miami, and Mike Mularkey was my offensive coordinator.
So what did you like about Jason Garrett? Because a lot of people don't think he's a very good coach. Just as the head coach of the Cowboys, but
he's one of those guys that he was obviously talented enough to make it in the NFL and was a great football player, but it never came natural to him. Right. Or I should say it's not like he was an Elway or a Marino where he could sit on his back foot and throw an 18 yard comeback, you know, in his sleep. He was somebody who had to figure out how to get things done in a way that wasn't necessarily physical, right? So he was able to think. Those are the guys that make the best coaches, right? Because if Marino gets up there and is like, you know, yeah, what do you mean? You take the snap and, you know, you just throw it to that guy over there. Well, what do you mean you throw it to that guy over there? I got a rush coming off the edge. I'm getting pushed back by my O-line, and I got a safety driving this, you know, from the weak side. How can I throw that ball? He's like, I don't know. You just throw it.
Get it in.
You just get it in. Like, that's the answer so often. But what Jason did, he's like, okay, well, look, how do you get your feet in a position to throw that ball? Where's your soft spot in the pocket? What tells you ahead of time that you're going to be able to throw that ball? Who's the guy that tips it off that sees, I'm going to leave that open, right? So there was a whole thought process that Jason incorporated that didn't necessarily have to do with the physical aspect of the delivery of the ball. And that's what made him a great coach. That, and you could tell he cared. Right. There was a connect. Like, he was personally vested. He had a vested interest in your success, not because it enhanced his career, but because he cared about you. Right. There was a relationship. There was a, you know, it was
just
a friendship.
Sounds like he's just a good guy. This was in Miami.
That he was my quarterback coach in Miami.
So I want you to think about people listening. So Saban was, think about how many coaches you went through before you finally got a guy that taught you this extra layer of the game.
Well, that was what Tedford taught, right? So that's what got me there. That's what Tedford taught. And then there was this gap between Tedford and Jason Garrett of just, well, how do I, it's the story I told you where I have to throw an 18-yard comeback on the backside, but I've got a free rusher. And I asked the question, well, can I slide the protection? Can I, you know, can I somehow protect myself? Do I have a side adjust? Can I make it, you know, slide the line over there? And they said, no. I said, why not? They said, because that's not what Bill Walsh did. Instead of saying, well, yes, here's how, here's what you could think about. There's this gap between Tedford and Jason Garrett.
Trent Dilfer talked about this all the time.
How many years was that between Tedford and
five?
So that was all your years in Detroit, basically.
Trent Dilfer talked about this all the time. We used to have him on, and he said the biggest misnomer about football is that the NFL has the best coaching.
Oh.
And he said that he said some of the worst coaching in the world is done at the position level of NFL teams.
I was begging my quarterback coaches in Detroit to hammer down my fundamentals. Like, I would say to them before every practice, please keep an eye on my fundamentals. I know I tend to drop the ball. I know my stride on my drop gets bouncy at the end. You know, like, help me on these things. Never. Never.
So that's mainly because they're used to just coaching. Like, guys, well, that just can do everything that they ask, right?
I would say that they are more used to coaching. Here's your progression. A1 to 2 to 3. You go your drive, your basic, to your check down. And I don't care how you get it there, but you need to get it there. They know the book. They are handed a book, and it says, here's 2 jet flanker drive, and your progression is drive to basic to check down. And if you get, you know, somebody who comes free, then you can throw the post. Right. But if you throw the post, you better hit it. They don't teach how to get the ball there. They simply teach that is where it goes.
Isn't that what David Carr said? I mean, you know, I talked about this. David Carr had a good article in the New York Times.
He just said that the coaching he got, he said it wasn't until he was already basically out of the league before someone taught him how to properly.
It was read a defense.
Read a defense and diagnose it and being able to solve problems. And he goes, I spent 7 years before someone actually sat down and explained it to me.
Oh, I knew how to diagnose a defense from Tedford, but I couldn't, for the first 4 years of my career, I couldn't get a head coach to allow me to do that. Yeah. It was scripted A to B to C, because that's what Bill Walsh did.
Yeah, and I remember, speaking of like not being a physical talent, you know, marginal guy, but you know, I was there, and I remember my first camp in Denver. The two defensive tackles were Trevor Price and Chester McLaughlin. And last time I checked, it was like 9 Pro Bowls between the two of them, and both had arms that were longer than my legs. And I remember just literally not being able to do anything against either one of those guys, and sitting there in the film and just getting just my ass reamed and asking, what am I supposed to do about that? And the response was, figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Block him.
What am I supposed to do with a guy who
block him.
He puts his hand in my chest and my hands can't touch him, and he physically drives me back, and your response was, figure it out. And I'm being like, well, Yeah, it's...
What do you want me to do about that? I want you to become a radio talk show host.
Yeah.
Offensive line coach, though. I mean, come on. Couldn't I coach the offensive line? Yeah. Like, hey, block those guys.
Figure
What's
it
matter?
Out. Hey,
What's the matter
yeah.
with you?
Yeah, no.
Joey, good combo. Thank you.
Yeah.
Joey Harrington... yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Joey Harrington each Friday, normally, courtesy of BMW Portland, Portland's only BMW dealer where relationships matter. Go to BMWPortland.com. Joey, coming in a day early because Utah, Oregon will be live here on The Fan tomorrow in his time slot. Will we talk to you next week?
Next week, of course.
Let's talk again
anywhere.
Next week.
Story You're, time.
You are stuck with me
Great.
Through the Super Bowl contraction.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Juicy. Oh, hell, they didn't tell me that.
I'm kind of excited about this
through
now.
The Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Joey, each Friday, 5:30. Let's club next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.